Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here. It is April 24th, 2025. I'm Henrik. Hope you're all doing well out there. We're back here today with another interview. We're going to focus a little bit on homesteading, off-gridding, if you will, intentional community. Maybe if we have time, we'll talk about some of the farming aspects of that as well, because we are in a period right now where they're introducing and rolling out, you know, 3D printed meats, AI-generated molecules, synthetic foods, all this garbage, essentially. So our guest here today is Curtis Stone. I've caught him in some of the spaces, actually, tuning in, and he's made some really good points, and I've enjoyed listening to him. So, Curtis, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Henrik.
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. First of all, obviously, we didn't talk before this, but we had the sad news of your wife passing away. So my condolences to you and the family, and I hope everyone is, you know, dealing with it accordingly. I can't even imagine how and where to begin if that happened to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope you're doing good, you know.
Sorry. We're doing good. Yeah, we're doing good. It was a long road, and we're definitely doing great. Okay. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you bet. I don't want to linger on it, but I just want to mention a couple of words on it, you know. So anyway. Very, very good. So, yeah, we do have kind of a limited time, and there's so many things I want to ask you, so I might have to have you back, but we have an hour, and so I want to squeeze in as much as possible. So let's just get right to it. Why did you want to start homesteading? Eventually, I would assume off-gridding, is that the right term? Going off-grid. What things kind of around you at the time spurred you to go in this direction, or maybe it was family, maybe your parents or friends or others around you were already into this. Tell us a story.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to be off-grid for 30 years, really. It always been a dream of mine to live on the land as connected to God's creation as possible, just because, you know, really, I learned about the central bank a long, long time ago. And you know, what we have here, I'm sure your audience understands this more than most, is that, you know, we have a usury system that makes everybody, just through using the system, an indentured servant in some way or another. Either through direct taxation, which just pays interest on money printing, or inflation, which is all manufactured and created by this group that wants to keep us in a subservient position. That always bothered me. And I always felt that if you could have more agency over your life, the food you eat, the energy you use, the relationships that you have, all of these things, you could at least stop them from screwing you just a little bit more and incrementally. And so I'd always wanted to be off grid. I planned for that. It was always a long goal of mine, a long-term goal of mine. I started a commercial farm in 2009 that was very successful. And I did that as a launching point because I didn't have the money to buy land at the time. But I did it as a launching point to just start farming. And if people are familiar with my work, I wrote a book called The Urban Farmer that came out in 2016. And in that, I kind of just document my whole business model and my plan and how I scaled that business. And I started with land that I didn't own. I started with rented land. And so at that time, doing that was like a foot in the door for me to build a skill set, build a network, build all the sort of forms of capital outside of money. Well, money was involved too. So that I could eventually get here. That's where I am now. I'm off grid. We live on 40 acres. But it was really the COVID show that really began this journey, because I had this amazing urban homestead in the city of Kelowna, BC, Canada.
How urban?
Suburban, okay. Like not urban, urban,
yeah,
like
right.
Downtown Chicago.
Yeah. No.
You know, 2,000 square foot lots, quarter acre lots, you know,
okay,
you know, single family homes, that kind of style. That's what that book is all about, is farming in that context. Like, you know, the image there, you can kind of see, you get the idea.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, during COVID, I went from being a golden boy in my town. Everybody knew me. I'd been on the radio multiple times, television shows. I was a local boy done good, as you could say. But during the COVID show, I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I watched my immediate community in that town turn into crazy people, right? The neighbors peeking out the blinds to make sure that my kids are wearing masks in my garden that was fenced, you know, like, so we saw people go crazy, and it drove us crazy to some degree. And we said, we're out of here. So I began about a 6-month journey in, I believe it was April of 2020 to find a property. And that's how we ended up here in Southern BC. And and we began that journey then, and it's been a real grind ever since. So I've been working on this property for 4 years essentially, but now I'm living in the house. I'm a lot more comfortable. It's not completely done, but it's come a long way. And so why we wanted to be off grid was we wanted to get away from situations where we had no agency. Essentially, if you can boil it down in a simple philosophical way, that's really as simple as it needs to be. I want to have agency over my life and my children's life, so that these assholes that are coming at us from everything you mentioned in the intro, you know, the GMOs, the eating bugs, the chemtrailing, even all the stuff that it's just endless assault. What can I do to get more agency? I'm not proclaiming that I have 100% agency. I don't know if anybody does, but I'm at least stepping in that direction constantly.
Yeah. So yeah, COVID times, that's an interesting period. What about before that? Did I mention, obviously you're in Canada as well. So you guys are being slammed with open borders there as well. Doesn't matter Absolutely. What government is in place or whatnot. How was that situation where you were at? Had anything of this to do with immigration, overpopulation, increasing housing prices, land prices, things like that?
Well, you know what? It didn't at the time, Henrik, just in that it wasn't immediately in front of me. I've been a guy for many, many years who's paid attention to geopolitics and things like that, and I'd known about the immigration issues, but I wasn't seeing them during COVID. I just wasn't seeing them. What I was seeing at that time in the town, Kelowna, that I was in was a massive rise in homelessness and drug addiction. And I have even, I'm not exaggerating, 10 friends that I go back from between, say, kindergarten and grade 12 that are on the street down there doing drugs. They've abandoned their families, all white guys without no reason to live, essentially.
Yeah.
And so that, at the time, that was on my radar. But since then, absolutely, the migration issue is, in my opinion, number one. I've been across the country in the last 12 months. I've been across the United States. And it is absolutely insane. And during the time that my wife started to fall ill, I had a lot of time at home, and I kind of just went down the rabbit hole with the sort of white identity space, if you will. And I ended up going on a bunch of different Twitter spaces. You mentioned you'd heard some of those.
Yeah.
And I kind of discovered this community, if you will. And I knew it was out there. It was never really a thing that was that on my radar just because it wasn't so in front of my face. But because of the travel I'd done in the last year, it really had become that. And so now it's probably top three issues that if there isn't significant change on, we're all in deep trouble. There's many solutions to it, I think, but, it is a big one for sure.
Any issues? I mean, in the spheres you're in, YouTube channels, again, maybe that's not kind of that you're not hiding that, but you're not maybe so front facing. You're going to conferences, things like this. Is it an issue at all?
Not yet. I would actually say at the same time, though, you know, people know me from my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
For the most part, because that's
yeah, 603,000 subs. That's good.
Yeah. Ten years been at that. I haven't come out with that stuff so much on that platform. And I don't know if I would bother to, because I know it would just get taken down.
Yeah, right.
And so I kind of keep that channel as it is. I get into these things a little bit in my live streams, but not that much. I mean, one thing I really kind of came out of the closet with during the whole COVID show was my knowledge of the law, because I had been doing my own sort of private law practice and looking for remedy for 10 years and found a lot of solutions and remedy. I talk about some of those things on my live streams, but I'd never gone down too far on the white identity stuff because, well, frankly, it really became a paramount issue for me in the last year when my wife was ill. And so it just, I haven't really done much with it. And I think it's time and place, you know, for me, it's really an issue in my local community, and not because we actually don't have a lot of immigrants here. Actually, we're probably one of the whitest places in Canada, but I know the federal government wants to change that, and they're starting to spread all these East Indians that they're pumping into Toronto all over the country. And so it's made me take a serious interest in the local politics, and I don't want to make any announcements, but I will be I potentially will be doing something with that. And so I'm going to have to eventually dox myself to some degree, but we'll see.
Okay.
But I really do feel like if we don't tackle this issue on all angles, culturally, socially, Politically, locally, I think federally, there's just no hope to change anything there.
Yeah.
But if we don't really start coming together as, you know, white European settlers, we're done. And I, my children are blonde hair and blue eyed, and I would like them to have the opportunity to meet another blonde hair, blue eyed person like I did my wife that I fell in love with and had those children with.
Yep.
And so that is a very important issue for me, especially because now my kids. And I have also found it's even difficult in today's era with the COVID vaccine and how much of a divide that created in society to associate with people that share your values even that way. So we become more and more balkanized and more specialized in the types of people we surround ourselves with. And so, yeah, for me, it's very, very important issue.
Yeah, and it's maybe slightly easier maybe to address this today. It's a little bit more voices are doing it than just 10 years ago or something like that.
Exactly.
So it's a little bit, maybe not like the JQ stuff, but like, you know, they're trying to pass laws about that stuff. But anyway, yeah, no, that's interesting. Did you learn a lot of this yourself? I don't know if you addressed that or if you want to go deeper into that. Parents, people around you at the time.
With homesteading and stuff?
Yeah, which helped you to get to where you are now?
Yeah. I've always been self-taught. I've always just been a starter. Like I start before I know. I'm kind of I get in the car and I just drive, and then I put the seatbelt on when I'm driving, kind of thing. I've always been that kind of way. So I'm all self-taught. I read books, watched YouTube videos, and then just started. And I made, you know, tons of mistakes, and I documented those mistakes. But I've always taken my learning and experiences very seriously. It's an important part of my life and how I cultivate new skills.
So tell us
and
a bit.
So, yeah.
Now go ahead, finish that thought.
No, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask you. So where these are major topic, obviously, but maybe we can boil it down to a few things. Where would you start if you were to do this over again? And your interest is to, you know, eventually these are piecemeal. You don't jump at the top of the stairs right away. You take one small step at a time. This is, you know, very reasonable and logical, obviously. But how would you position yourself if you wanted to do what you have done now, but you're just starting over?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on where you wanted to go. There's kind of four things that I think with kind of homesteading that are the main pillars. There's food, water, energy, and shelter. And so I would say, as far as food is concerned, I would just start growing stuff. Just start growing things that you like, or start raising certain animals that you like. Maybe you just want to have egg layers. Maybe you want to do a batch of meat birds. You know, that's relatively easy. Raising rabbits, things like that. Those are easy, low-hanging fruit things that you can do. Plant a fruit tree in your backyard. Grow some microgreens. There's lots of little things that you can do to get going. And I think that's the most important thing, is just pick a thing that you like out of all these things and get going. You know, as far as, you know, building resilience in your homestead, think about it or even in the home that you live in, think about it the same way. It's like you need food, water, energy, and shelter to live. Full stop. How do those elements look in your home right now? So if you live in an urban city, you come home and there's no food in the fridge, but you can just walk down to the grocery store and there's food there for you, and you hope that there is, because if there isn't, you're in trouble. So what step do you take to add a little bit of resilience to that? Well, maybe you've got 7 days of consistent, organized, stored food in your pantry. Then you go to 30 days. Then you go to 3 months. Then you go to a year. Then you have a bug out bag. So if the shit hits the fan, you can grab your bug out bag and go. Things like that. You know, water, same idea. You come home, you turn the tap on, you hope that it works. If it doesn't, what do? Well, keep a few hundred liters of water in your basement, in a pantry or something. You know, maybe dig a pit well in your backyard. You know, things like that. Energy. Get a small generator. You know, just start to think about the resilience of your home life, and if the Klaus Schwabs of the world decided to turn you off because you were a bad little boy and said some wrong things about Hitler, then they can't throttle you, or they can throttle you less. And even with that, I would say always have a plan B. You know, always have, what happens if this happens? Have a contingency plan, and then that's the best place to start.
Now, did you happen to just pick BC specifically, or were you already there? Was this, how did you go about like picking the land?
I was born and raised in BC, and so I was out here. It is probably the most beautiful place in Canada. I know everybody would say that about their home province, but I think you're on the West Coast too. You know, it's very similar. You know, you think Northern California, Oregon, Washington, they are hands down some of the most beautiful places of the United States. BC is the same. Another thing that's really great about BC as well, and it's the same for all the other West Coast states that are in the mountains, even Northern California, is despite the fact that you have a left-wing government, there still is a lot of windy roads, dirt roads, nebulous terrain that it makes it simply more difficult and time-consuming for bureaucrats to navigate. So in a way, you have, you know, an out-of-the-box sort of more freedom than you do living in a square grid where there's roads and everything is just concrete and infrastructure. When you get out into the country and live in areas where there's topography, trees, space, you just by its own virtue have more freedom. And so that what I tell people is there's a direct correlation between concrete and tyranny. The more concrete you're close to, the more money you're close to. And where the money flows, the policy goes. So where there's more infrastructure, there's more government regulation, there's more left-wing sort of socialist mentality because people are just by their nature dependent on the state more. So that's what I like about BC. That's why I've stayed here. It is actually quite free when you're living in the country.
Yeah, definitely. Is your plan to do, and you don't have to say this if you, you know, don't talk about that or whatever part of this, but is your intention to bring in more people? Do you want to have more people like you around? Maybe you already have that. What's your view on this with intentional community and these kinds of
yeah.
things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my homestead is a little tiny intentional community in a way. There's a lot of family around here. To turn my property as it is now into a sort of bona fide intentional community doesn't really accommodate that. There's too much radical topography. There's just not enough space. Even though it's a large acreage, you know, there's really only 5 acres that are open. And most of that's used by my farming infrastructure, multiple greenhouses, multiple garden plots, multiple orchards, multiple ponds, all these types of things. So certainly I would be able to, you know, accommodate people. And I do, I have, you know, family members have dwellings up here and stuff. So we're always able to host our sort of extended family during the summer, the spring, the fall, over Christmas, things like that. But yeah, I am very interested in intentional communities. I have been for probably 20 years. I've visited many of them around the United States. And so I am interested in them. I think for me, on a personal level, I'm more interested in being near one than necessarily living in one.
Yeah, I get that.
And that yeah. Well, and it's yeah. like there's something to be said about good fences and good neighbors, you know?
Yeah.
But, and also too, like I'm already set up that I'm not going to sell my property and then start an intentional community.
Right.
Yeah. I was trying to do that for probably 15 years of getting to know people in my social circles that were had the same motivations as me. I was trying to do that, but it always with these things, when it comes out of the money and it comes down to just making things happen, people are a lot of talk up front, but then when it comes down to signing on the dotted line and making it happen, people kind of shy away. And so that's why I just always was like, I'm just going to do it myself. Forget trying to wait for people.
Yeah, I mean, our ancestors had the advantage of living close to each other, knowing each other, multiple generations. You knew exactly who the trustworthy families were or whatever. And that kind of takes me to the next question of that, right? Basically, organic community versus, and it's up to knock it, but like it is... What some people try to do is synthetic, right? We agree on this ideologically. Let's get together in this spot and do that. But do you really know them? And again, it's not a talking down or saying don't try it. Absolutely. I'm supportive of all those things. But I'm saying there's a whole set of other problems that might come and they could be resolvable. You can have, you know, there's ways, right? So
great. There are ways.
But, you know, but just that idea of the drama, maybe there's money involved. They're saying, you know, what if this family just turns out like you can't really have, you know, you got to kick them out now. There's problems.
Politics,
right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys you're probably familiar with, like the Shield Wall Network and
rings a bell, but I can't put a name on it.
Billy Roper.
Okay, that's right.
There's also, you know, the back to land movement, Arville and those guys. You know, there's guys doing this stuff. It's really, I find it so funny because I was sort of a lefty for a long time. Not a lefty as they are today, because the left today is not what the left was 10 years ago, right? The left used to just be kind of anti-establishment, but that's how I always was. And I was into all these intentional communities and all that stuff back then, and it was kind of hippy dippy back then. But it's so interesting to see how it's come full circle, and now it's the most right-wing guys that are into intentional communities and eco-villages.
Well, but that makes sense, because now they run the government. They're in control. Let's not even get into that. It becomes a Trump in America.
We all kind of gone around.
The morality, that's what I'm saying. The institutions as they exist right now is their institutions. Like, they're
yes.
That's why when they're beginning to dismantle them now or attack them, then it's like an attack on them, right?
Yeah, and that's why the right wing is the anti-establishment in more or less, not in matter.
Yeah, not technically, but yeah.
but you know, it is interesting how that has gone. The problem, you were really correct in your observation, in that we haven't come out of. So I'm 45 years old, and I did not come out of the times that my grandparents came out of, where, you know, where you were saying how communities were formed back then, there was more needs and benefits. There was direct needs to do that. The globalist economy has compartmentalized all of human needs to be serviced by corporations. And so we don't need each other in the same way that we did. That is changing as it's all unwinding now. And so the reasons and methods to get into community are going to be different than they were 100 years ago. And that's okay. I think guys like Billy Roper and Oliver Arville are putting out good examples of what can be done. And I really appreciate how a lot of these gentlemen are just sharing, hey, this is what we're doing. Take it for what it's worth. You don't have to follow us and join our community. But hey, take it for what it's worth. And if you think you can do it better, let us know.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
They have a model, and people can adopt that or tweak some things or whatnot. And one of them might be, intensely successful, and that's obviously great. So we're kind of, we're learning this as we go, just like your journey, in a sense, like all of us, I guess. But you're figuring this out as you go, what works, what doesn't. And it's not reinventing the wheel, but as you said, the circumstances are new. All of us have, grown up, even in a... where I grew up in Sweden, even a socialist country, was still kind of like the rugged individualism in a certain extent, right? It was collectivized, totally was. But it was still individual, like, no, you do this yourself, and you put, you don't ask others for, I mean, we do help each other, but it's like, you do it yourself because you don't need that anymore. And so when that is taken away, you rip the guts out of the need for community overall, which I think is part of how successful they have been in actually deracinating us, partially at least.
Absolutely. And I have traveled Sweden quite extensively. I've been all through the rural area, many rural areas of Sweden, been to Stockholm. And, there's no, for the European context, if you've been to Sweden, it's just so visceral when you go to Stockholm and you hang out, and it's literally just metrosexual type men, really skinny, pasty guys, and then super alpha black guys, because they're all the imported ones, right? And then you go to the beach, like the main beach in Stockholm there. I remember I was there, this is like 6 or 7 years ago, and it was even noticeable then, but it's just like you see all these scrawny men that barely have girlfriends, and then you see all these super buff black guys with like two beautiful blonde Swedes all around their arms, and you're going like, oh my goodness. But then you go to the country in Sweden, and then you meet the real Norsemen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I shook more hands of 7 foot tall men in rural Sweden than I'd ever seen in my life, because none of them were in Stockholm.
No, they all like, fuck this shit, we're out. That's it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a problem, but that's a different discussion. Where do you go? It's kind of that part of the, do we flee, right? Do we just escape and then try to, because the thing that they're building right now is basically, to boil it down, a digital prison system, essentially, right? CBDCs, potentially UBI in the wake of this, as AI rolls out, automation, all these kinds of things, right? So you will become dependent on that system. However, that system is also a threat, right? Because things could change very drastically. You might get a new government in place, and it might not change overnight, but it might change by the time your kids is old enough to take over what you're doing or expand on their own or something like that. So, you know, this discussion of like, is there a way to future-proof this? In a way, it never is because it just drastically changed. But you have that overall movement of like, as there's more popular for people to try to get back to the land, the WFs and the UNs and, you know, national governments, it's just like, no, you should back into the megapolises, into the mega cities, live in your shoebox, put on your VR headset, while we just let the forest reclaim the land type of thing.
That's
right.
The rewilding project, right, from Agenda 21. That's exactly the agenda. And I believe kind of what you're laying out there is that there's a sort of a dichotomy of thought that I like to iterate, is that it's the sort of model of, do you stand and fight or do you exit and build?
Yeah.
And so, okay, stand and fight. Okay, you're living in one of these cities that's just getting, like, imagine Toronto, Ontario, for example, in Canada, getting absolutely injected with so many East Indians that you walk down the street, most streets in Toronto, and white people are like 2%. It's absolutely shocking. Meanwhile, they've got all this 5G infrastructure around you. All the other remaining white people around you are totally woke and still wearing masks. And so, okay, do you stand and fight there when you're completely surrounded and there's this slow boiling attrition that's wearing you down? They're just wearing your spirits down. You're not surrounded by God's creation and nature. You're surrounded by concrete and 5G and poison food and poison people and no cultural homogeny, no social fabric. Do you stand and fight there? Because how long are you going to last? Or do you exit and build? Get to nature, surrounded by God's creation, get to free space, get to being around your brethren and people that share your values, where your friends' kids look like your kids, and you can at least start building something so that you could perhaps stand and fight better. Because I don't think stand and fight is going to last that long in most of these metropolitan areas. I think the battle is lost. And frankly, if you read Agenda 21, and I read Agenda 21 back in the late 90s, and if you read it and they talk about rewilding, they don't talk about rounding people up in the country. Nowhere do they do that. They only talk about creating policies and incentives to get people back into the cities. So all the welfare programs are in the cities. All the programs that benefit you from the state are there. They want to get you back in, but they're not going to get you off your property per se. I'm sure there's all kinds of stories out there, but I'm not seeing that. What I see, and I live in a left-wing country and a left-wing province, is that there's far more freedom out here. Nobody bothers me. I know my neighbors, and I have a relationship with them based on needs and benefits, real needs and benefits, not being stuck in some shoebox apartment surrounded by East Indians who don't even speak your language. So I would say the exit and build strategy in general, I mean, everybody's context is different, and I'm not suggesting everybody do the same thing, but I would say if you can exit and build to some degree, even if it's incrementally, it's a far better strategy to actually stand and fight, because you might last the long game. Whereas how many more years can you live in a city of these cities? I mean, it's so woke now, and even though the political pendulum has swung back to the right, and it is in Canada too, doesn't matter. It's a little too late. They're just going to, the woke stuff is all a straw man. They're going to continue the same globalist policies because the banks cannot, because we can't pay the banks. They've printed up so much money. There's so much interest that we shouldn't have to pay at all. That's odious debt in my opinion, but we are paying it. And that's why they need to keep pumping in immigrants, to keep the people who are going to go and pay all those taxes coming in, because they've told Whitey for 50 years, don't have kids. And so, lo and behold, Whitey didn't have kids. Meanwhile, the Jeets they're pumping in here are having 8-1.
Yeah.
So, how do you stand and fight in that?
Yeah. You know, there's sort of things that worries me about, you know, my children and their children and things like this too. Obviously, proximity then, it's like, yeah, how do you know that they will have that the values you have, even though you might instill that they're preserved, if they're proximity to other racial groups, yeah, it's more likely that they will marry them and they will terminate your line essentially because of that. At the same time, shielding them too much Yeah. Doesn't also give them the experiences that they do need to understand what's out there. And it's this constant tug and pull. And I'm like, now we got to see, you know, you got to have one foot in this world and one in the other. Maybe there's something like you got to have, maybe not limited proximity, but like you have to have controlled exposure under like, you know, controlled circumstances or something. You know, these are some of the things I'm thinking about. Like, what do we, you know, how do we, as you said, I'm thinking long term, obviously, but also short term. Because it could just change,
I agree.
You know?
I agree. And I think in a way it's default, what you said, and that's going to be the default case because it's very difficult to go and totally isolate. It's difficult to do it economically. It's difficult to do it just as far as the logistics of it. So I think that's a given, you know, my kids, yeah, I definitely sheltered them during COVID. I sheltered my wife and kids during COVID. And fortunately, it didn't affect my kids. It did affect my wife. It did not help her at all. Just to see the madness with people. But I'm proud to say that I did completely shield my kids from it during that time. But now, yeah, they're out there, you know, we have friends, we go into the local town and we see things that aren't necessarily our way of life. You know, my kids are pretty well traveled. I've taken them around on a lot of my trips over the years. And so they see the stuff and we talk about it. And I'm not afraid to talk about it anymore. I mean, I'm not afraid to tell my kids that they should prefer, if they are ever going to be in a relationship, it is preferable to be with somebody white. It is preferable to be with somebody that looks like them because their genetics are stronger. My wife was Dutch, and I'm a white Anglo-Saxon. But our genes do well together. Our characteristics are exemplified. And why is that a bad thing, right? Why is that a bad thing? Whereas everybody else does it, except it's only controversial when Whitey talks about it.
Yeah. Which tells you something. They're worried. they're very worried, right? Now, exactly. I mean, yeah, we don't even know how long. 40,000 years of genetic refinement were adapted to these northern climates and things like that. I mean, we have advantages there, and you want to preserve that. You want to keep that. Obviously, nothing wrong with that. It's, in fact, your duty. It's your moral, you know, obligation to ensure that continues. And they're trying hard, man. They're doing everything they can psychologically, try to attack kids. They're flooding our nations with immigrants.
Because they know that when we finally get together, it's going to end pretty quickly. And hopefully we can make it peaceful and we can do it in a very civil way. But yeah, no, the establishment know that as soon as Whitey starts to collectivize, it's over for a lot of people. Because the truth of the matter is, white Europeans are the most productive people in the world. And the greatest inventions, all the great aspects of civilization has come from white European culture. And so it's just a fact. Not to say that other cultures haven't contributed great things. Of course they have. But what's wrong with us celebrating our culture and saying, hey, we want more of that?
It's only us who try to be fair and say, well, everyone contributed. Well, everyone else was like, screw you. We did all that. You know, we was the Kangs or whatever the hell the argument
is. Yeah, you know. We was Kangs. Yeah, exactly.
So, no, it's. I think that's slowly but surely that's coming to a close, that, you know, that whole, the guilt tripping, and it's just not working and people are not caring about that shit anymore for the most part. Of course, there's always exceptions and always a bunch of, you know, leftist and unfortunately many of our countries, but overall we don't need their approval, right? We don't need to bow to their let them be, you know, dictating morality of what just need to do what we need to do, and it's at this point it's existential. This is survival. And if we don't do this, yeah, as you said in the beginning, we're screwed, right? We have to get this right. And that's part of why, you know, I want to do shows like this. Like how do we do this? You know, and what unifies us? Is it, our common shared ethnos? Some type of religious system? Is it all of the above? Is it just surviving? As you said there, it's interesting with the dependency that like, comfort has always been an enemy, right? And you can see that with globalization. You've seen that with, basically international trade, offshoring then of industry. All of a sudden, you can just buy cheap shit at, you know, your local Walmart, whatever, some box store. And as all that progresses, we get lazier and lazier, more comfortable.
Exactly.
We don't need anybody. I can do everything myself, whatever. But now, in a weird way, right, in a turn of events, as it gets, and I'm not one of these that the worse it gets, the better it is. But I'm saying we have to be forced out of that comfort zone. I'm fearful that the UBI, the automation, the print, here's this robot that will do everything for you.
Yes,
here's vertical farming.
That's what they want.
That's what they want, right? I mean,
that's
complacency.
That's the last thing.
Yeah.
That's the as I've said for many years, give me convenience or give me death. That's the Western motto. And we're in that cycle of weak men to hard times, right? That's where we are. Hard times lead to good times, or strong men lead to good times, so on and so forth. We're in the weak men to hard times phase. And so that's okay. We've been here before. I just think that, if people don't start getting serious, then it's going to be difficult. And yeah, you kind of touched on it a bit there. Like, what is the unifying thing? Because there's a lot of things that we could unify on. Would it be religion? I don't know. That's kind of tough.
It is tough.
There's variations there. Is it the specifics of, say, I only want to be around with Germans? Well, that's tough because I'm in Canada and I'm close to the U.S. and I've done business in the U.S. for 10 years. So I consider myself an American in many ways as well. That's tough there too because of the founding of America. Whereas German culture, you can stand on that in Europe. In French culture, you can stand on that. The challenge that we have in the West, in Canada and the U.S. is where do we stand on the specifics? I think to start, I think frankly, and I've kind of flip-flopped on this a bit over the years. Is it political? Is it cultural? Is it race? Is it religious? I think actually the race thing is. Just because it, for the American context, in the sense to say, I would like to just as a starter be around white people. If they're German, Italian, French, Irish, Scottish, British, Swedish, Norwegian, it doesn't matter so much to me. That's a good starter. Once we have done that for a period of time and people have balkanized into small towns and communities, I think we have to take over local politics. I think that's going to be the next big step. Take over the regional and county and small local politics in the city councils. We need to do that and run as a team and run as a unified unit and start to make a presence in the small towns. Let the cities fall. Okay. That's just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. And then come together on
salvaged.
A bribe. And what's that? I don't think they can either.
Not
without a great fight. And what's it worth? We need to live a life. I have young children. I don't want to be in some leftist hellhole having social justice warriors scream at my kids.
I know. Maybe like younger men that haven't established. I think it's about what where you are in your stage of life too, right? Because like
that's right.
I don't want us to fully pull out because again, as we said before. If there's no one there standing in the way or try to stop it or organize, they'll pass some goddamn. I mean, look at South Africa, right? Land appropriation without compensation or shit like this. As demographics change and they can
perhaps,
just claim your shit or whatever. I mean, so you have to fight, but I agree with you. There's no place for like young kids there. But then at the same time, they need to be aware of those realities. You can't completely shield them, as you discussed earlier. I think if you educate them along the way, let them see how it is, kind of, you do entry point, visits or something. It sounds ridiculous.
For sure, but
you know,
the thing at the end of the day, Henrik, if young white men don't get out of the cities, they're not having babies. There's a direct correlation.
But the women are in the cities, though, for the most part.
I know, but you got to pick a good one and get her out.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I'm saying that they have. It could be wise to be in that form. Join an active clubs. Be in the city. Have backing. Make sure you don't catch yourself again. My rugged individualism. Here you are, and then a pack of Arabs show up, and they kill you basically, or whatever. Or
yeah, exactly.
Beat you half to death.
Get your blonde hair, blue eyed, beautiful girlfriend. That's what I did, and get her out of the city.
Yep.
And you will get her pregnant, and you will see a woman who thought she was a career woman turn into a homemaker real quick.
Yeah.
A woman metamorphosizes when they get pregnant, and that's something that I wish more young men would experience. I wish I would have started younger myself, but I didn't have my shit together back then. I didn't start having kids till I was 37. But
sex amazing for me, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. But it just changes.
Way too late,
but
yeah, it is what it is.
It changes your life. Yeah.
Yeah. And it might not be true for every woman, obviously, but there is a little bit of this shit test. Like, they're kind of waiting for the men to, like, step up and just fucking take the reins. You do know what I'm saying? Like, sure, there's always the lunatic that you're not going to be able to, like, convert or whatever. But, like, for the most part, yeah, they adapt to the men. They adapt to the stronger, dominant male. And we have just backed off and backed off and backed off. And that goes back to what you said before. You see a bunch of these pasty, weak, you know, shit-lib men in the cities that are like, somehow think this is great. You know? What's that?
Oh, yeah. Millennials for the most part, too. I would say, this is statistically provable. Generation Z, which is the newest generation coming up in their late 20s, they're the most conservative generation we've had in 100 years. And you can observe within those people. I mean, I travel around. I've been around in my career for a long time. I've met, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people in my life and my travels, in the real world, not on social media. And what I can see today is young conservative women or young women are more conservative than ever. With Generation Z, they are. You see it on their Twitter profiles. You see it on their social media presence. And when you meet them in person, they are just – they want a man, and they know where they want to be. They know their place. Whereas the millennial women bought into feminism, and many of them are conservatives now, but their eggs are all dried up, and they bought into this lie. And now, you know, you see them with their Facebook profiles holding like three dogs and three cats, and they always say I'm a dog mama and stuff like that. It's like they're kind of lost in a way. The good advantage that men have, though, is that they can just go and be with younger women, and that's probably something that I'm going to be having to do at some point to move on. I would like to have more family and carry on my genetics and make more white babies, and the younger generations are they've seen the millennials get woke and get retarded. And all these younger generations are going, don't want that. No, thank you. Feminism sold them an empty package, and we don't want that ourselves. And so I'm hopeful in some ways. And I just think, yeah, people got to get serious. Like, if you don't want to see your people disappear and you want to wake up and live in a place like Toronto where you look around and nobody looks like you and you don't even hear English, well, carry on. But if you want to have a future where you can have a life like I had, that's what I want for my kids at least, is to have what I had, you're going to have to get radical. And unfortunately, the circumstances that we're in today are very different than they were 20 years ago.
And in a way, again, there our enemies are making that mistake, I think. In a way, I'm glad, right? It's insufferable and it's tragic, but like, thank the gods that these people are not like, they're just like us. They just have a different skin color. You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of glad that they're not speaking a language. I mean, it's less likely, I think, then for our descendants to actually mix out with them, frankly. And obviously not for everyone, but for the most part, right? It's almost
I think so too.
Turn up
it's
the
still
volume.
A numbers game, though.
No, of course. Absolutely. No, I mean, I'm not saying this is the solution. I'm just saying, luckily, they're so insane in like the way they've turned up the volume on this thing. Just open the floodgates. And it's like, when it's a shock to the system that fast, it's like, whoa, what's happening? And it's like, people are experiencing, they're walking out like, I say comments all the time, I'm the only Swedish person in this mall I went to the other day. And everywhere, like, because obviously no one is working. They're just there, you know, loitering around. But anyway. That is helping to wake people up, which is good. In other words, they need to be, in order for them to be confronted with the issue of race, they have to understand what's around them and who these people are and the fact that they are different from us, right? So in a way, our enemies, again, are kind of doing the work for us as they try to replace us, right?
They are. And I mean, it's just so funny when you let go of all the politically correct, you know, shackles that have been put in our minds for so long, all it takes is an observation of any country. I mean, you want to know how Indians are? Look at India. What happens in that country? They dump garbage into the rivers from bridges. Literally, that's their garbage dump. People are scratching through carrion and you know, there's dead bodies all over the place. Like, the country is disgusting. And yeah, there's some good parts to Indian culture, for sure, just like everything. But by and large, it's horrible. But we can also recognize and be honest with what our governments have been doing to us, in that They've created economic policies and political policies that favor these low paid dark skinned immigrants to come here, and they give them all kinds of benefits. So what happens is that the best talent leave the bad countries, and that exacerbates the problems that were already there. So, I mean, I'd love to think that we could live in this magic utopia where everybody just goes home to their home country. But that's realistically not going to happen. But yeah, look at a country like India, and you want to see how bad things are and how bad they can get here. Well, keep pumping in these migrants and we'll find out real quick, because there's, fortunately, in the US and Canada, they're big countries. And so what's going on in Toronto is really not what's going on here. But you know, that can change, and it is. And yeah, I mean, look at this video. I mean, just like the country is just this, it's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Like it's sick. And hey, but look at the way they live. And so is that all, oh, the social justice warriors like to blame it on colonialism. And it's like, well, but not really, because average IQs are really low. There's high inbreeding, you know, Indians don't even like themselves. I've worked with Indians almost my entire white life, my entire adult life. And my first job was at an orchard sorting tree fruit. And I worked with these Indians, and they'd bring a contractor Indian guy who was higher up on the caste system. And he would bring in a bunch of his second and third cousins that were all lower on the caste system. And they're basically subservient. They just, to them, they're animals. And they come in and they'll come to this country and literally work for free, because it's a better deal than what they had in their own country. Just to be in Canada working for free is a better deal than living there, what you see on the screen right now. And that is fundamentally the problem. And that's where, if whites don't start collectivizing and creating policies to benefit us, because there's all kinds of policies to benefit them, if we don't start creating policies to benefit us, we're going to be in that country. And if you import the third world, you're going to get the third world.
Yep, that's right. We're getting the exposure right now. And again, we've been shielded for a long time. And then, you know, but I think it can be, it has to be undone. It has to be unwound. They're doing all these tricks now to try to prevent that from happening. And again, that's why I look at some of the latest progress, you know, in terms of technology that they're trying to offer, right? Global brain connection, computer brain interface. See, there's no different. Everyone has the same access to information. Yeah. You know, like there's all these tricks to try to just like, even the thing, I put up a segment about the digital nations, and it's kind of like, it's weird. It's almost like this simulacrum version kind of what these intentional communities are. They want to build the infrastructure for a digital cloud nation or a network state on the internet. Do some shit with AI, obviously, some startup nation with like venture capitalists, and then eventually purchase land and actually make a physical location. But as they do, if you do indeed see those things pop up more and more and more, yeah, you'll see countries then beginning to sell off potentially their very valuable arable land to some of these like a startup nation, essentially. And now it's like, haha, now you can't undo it. And there's nothing that binds these people. There's not an ethnos, not ethnicity. It's just like basically my libertarian bottom line values or whatever the hell it is.
My Twitter profile looks like it's like one of those, you know, those stupid little NFTs, and like that's your community.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, that's not a community.
No.
And what you're saying is so true. It's a very high level psyop to trick people in. I mean, the thing that I've observed as somebody who's been paying attention to the New World Order for 25 years is that they just continuously rebrand, and they don't care about whether things are left-wing or right-wing. As long as it gets them to their totalitarian technocracy, that's really all that they care about.
Well, now but it's coming at the hands of, like, you know, the MAGA movement
of right-wing,
in America.
MAGA, exactly.
All of Silicon Valley just sunk their teeth. That's the word where the momentum is. Let's just use it. And that kind of goes back to what I want you to finish that line of thought, but just mention that quick. You mentioned about conservatives and women, whatever. Well, they're co-opting the conservatives, and their tent and the goalpost is just widening and widening too.
Absolutely.
So what is a conservative today is completely different than it was 20 years ago, you know? So
It's so obvious. And they, you know, you read a book like Tragedy and Hope from Carol Quigley, and that's kind of like the boilerplate of how the New World Order compartmentalizes society and gets away with this stuff. The whole false left and right paradigm kick you back and forth, so you think it's a new thing every time. It's the same old globalist shit continuously. But no, that's how they want us. And so the nice thing is, the thing that makes me optimistic is that they always need a handful of things. Number one, They actually need us alive. And my evidence for that is this. If they wanted us all dead, you know, there's that famous quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He was one of the top, you know,
Bilderberg guys. Yeah.
And he said, it's easier than ever just to wipe out a billion people. We could do that with the technology we have, but they don't. Why don't they? It's because they need us to will this world into existence. I have a sort of my spiritual beliefs are that, you know, we manifest our world around us by our intention and our will. And that's why they need us alive because they, and that's why the propaganda is so important to them. Because if they could just, if all they needed to do was just round us up or kill us all, why wouldn't they do it? They don't, because they need our will to buy into their belief to prop up their ideas, because ideas are manifested through people believing in them. And then they need our consent. That's why all laws are considered voluntary consent. It's written all throughout the Western statutes, and they always need your signature. So they need us to consent to this. It's because the devil didn't create the world. The devil administers the world. God is the creator. God created us and we create, but the devil needs us creators to consent to his creation, which is our creation through our ignorance. And so that's the game. And so I'm optimistic in the sense that it seems to me like it's getting easier and easier to see. Their psyops don't seem to work as well. People are waking up to a large part. I know that's a cliche to say, but I think it is observable. And so I'm optimistic in many ways. And I don't really care about this whole thing of trying to save everybody anymore. I don't care about that. I just care about us.
I want quality, not quantity. I'm speaking to the you know, depopulationist, right? That so many, you know, conspiracy theorists have been talking about. I'm certainly guilty of that old shows and stuff like that, but they're not doing a very good job now, are they? Right? I mean, if they really try to depopulate, it's just more and more
lazy.
People, and you know,
they've run out of ideas. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And now AI, the thing that's crazy, what I'm witnessing with MAGA, and just this new rebranding of the New World Order, which is like rah rah Israel and all that.
Yeah.
Is they're using AI to micromanage all of these subgroups. And so that's why they want everybody on social media, so that they can totally silo you, where you'll go on X and you won't even know that your 45,000 followers are all bots, literally all bots. And they've got you siloed, and you think you're out there making a difference because all your relationships are online. So you literally have no idea that you've been siloed. I believe that's what's happening right now. And I believe that's going to be the ultimate psyop that is going to sort of take the momentum. This is where we have to be careful as sort of people that care about, you know, white culture and all that. We have to be careful to do things in the real world. Like if you're just on Twitter spaces talking about these things, you could be siloed and you wouldn't even know.
Yeah.
But if you're actually doing things in the physical world, building a homestead, getting in a community, having live events, building culture with people in your area, then you can't be psyoped as easily.
Yeah.
So I'm optimistic that those of us who can see it will, and we will form our communities. And I think, frankly, they're going to leave us alone. It's when we go after them and poke the bear and march into Ottawa or march on Washington, D.C. and say, we want to take the reins of power. That's what they want you to say.
It depends on how strong. It depends on how strong we get doing what we're doing.
For sure.
You know, if they see us as a threat and sizable enough, and because part of it might be, well, they'll just kind of die. Their kids will go into the cities. Just let them, you know, it's too much of a hustle, kind of try to, you know, get them off their lane. Let's just let them just have their thing for a little bit. I think that's what they think.
Yeah.
But if we grow and get more, stronger communities, more cohesion, we get together, we sort of sort things out, take over maybe small local politics, as you said before. There might be. We'll see what happens. But they and this is my point of like, you know, entirely pulling out that there is a danger in that as well. And I don't mean that's just fleeing or running away. That's just like, how can you live in this madhouse?
You know?
Yeah, I know.
I want to enjoy, I want to.
But then I know it's not just about me, right? It's about, you know, coming generations and our entire folk, you know?
It has to be, but there has to be, if you want to go the long haul, which I'm interested in going, if you don't have a good life, if you're just in the trenches fighting leftists day in and day out, it's not a good life. If you don't have a beautiful woman to come home to, if you don't have beautiful children and gardens and things that you can enjoy life sucks. And at the end of the day, I think we're all born here to live a good life and bring heaven on earth to some degree. I'm not a practicing Christian, but I kind of believe that we could create heaven on earth for ourselves. But we have to smell the roses. You got to stop and smell the roses. Otherwise, life gets pretty tough. And a lot of us saw that during COVID. If you were in any kind of city that brought in these policies, you go, man, this grind day in and day out, I don't know how much longer I can take this. And so a lot of people moved then, changed, but a lot of people went back after COVID too, which I think was a bit of the mistake.
Yeah, I mean, look at how other institutions work, right? You can have, and of course, we're not in that position, but look at some of the establishment wealthy people, right? They live very, very, obviously very well, but that's also, you know, yeah, too much comfort, but that's a different discussion. I'm just saying you can make your enemy seethe by living a good life and being happy and do, you know, but then at the same time, they have institutions where they have their point people and they go into, in this case, our countries, our institutions
infiltrate,
and they undermine from the inside and stuff like that. And we need to get to a point where we're cohesive enough to like, okay, you know what? We're going to fund this guy's education in law, or like, you know, studying diploma, whatever it is, right? It's like to try to position this guy. He has no past history. Don't do any online shit. You know, you might feel these things, but like, here's some of these guys. We're paying for the education collectively to have them go into the system and basically disrupt or be there as, you know, to stop and stuff.
Absolutely.
It might not work. And that's not the only way. I'm just saying, just as one thing on the side, in addition to everything else.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, but all that starts with community.
I agree.
It's just like civilization, you know. Civilization, the backbone of civilization is agriculture, because without agriculture, you couldn't have specialization.
That's why they're roboticizing it now,
in the grind of agrarianism, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where we have to start on a micro scale and say, let's get together. Let's talk about who's interested in growing food. Let's talk about who's interested in putting their skills into the skill pot and coming together. Let's start with that and then go from there. Not everybody can be an agrarian. I'm not saying that. I'm a farmer and I'll be a farmer. I can be that guy. I'm not going to be the heavy equipment mechanic. I'll be a farmer and a guy who's in politics or something. I don't know, whatever our roles are going to be in these communities. But if we don't start really taking steps towards this, it's just a matter of time. It's attrition. The New World Order has been at it for so long. They can play a long game because they have all these institutions and think tanks and stuff behind them as well. And so if we don't start kind of tearing a page out of their book a little bit and say, hey, maybe we need to start looking at private societies. You know, the Freemasons are a private society. I'm not a Freemason. I'm not interested in any of their shit. It's all a big, you know, it's the first conspiracy theory I ever learned about. But they are a private society. Maybe we need to start forming private societies. If you want to be in this private society, you have to be this, this, and this. And if you're not, that's okay. Do your own thing. Or maybe you can be in this other group. I think ultimately, like what we talked about earlier, is that it does have to start with race, in my opinion.
I agree.
Because at least that is a broad umbrella. And I would even say, even in Canada specifically, I would even be more willing to have a society that was even a little bit broader outside of race, much in the same way that this country was founded primarily by, you know, European settlers. But there were a small amount of Chinese people that helped build the railroads, and some of those people have been here for generations. So for me, in my context, I would rather unify. It's kind of like where the JQ conversation can go, is do you unify only amongst whites, or do you unify amongst people that see a broader issue at the JQ? And so I think for my context here in Canada, it might be different from somebody in, say, Arkansas or Tennessee, but here I would say I wouldn't mind on a broad scale cooperating with people that I would consider heritage Canadians. And then on a micro scale, then we can start forming other subgroups. But we need first that main unifying thing that's going to say we reject everything the left-wing nation state is doing, and we need to self-organize so that we can survive the next 100 years.
Yeah, again, if it's, you got to think about it long-term politically. Now, I personally think that will be impossible, but if someone pulls it off to achieve certain things objectively, fine, that's okay, right? You can share a common goal with someone just up to the point where you share those interests, and then at that point you're like, phew, you diverge or whatever. But
that's it, and that's okay. That's human nature.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about being – look, if we're going to win, we need to do – I mean, not compromise, obviously, on these things, but I'm saying if you're interested in winning, yeah, at times you might have to just like, okay – fine, I'll do this one thing, and it's not where I want to be in the end destination, but to get there, if I can piggyback on someone else or whatever exactly. It is, right? To essentially, you could call it using them, or again, if you have a shared common interest, fine, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, do what's necessary, and then you move on, you know, from there. That's totally fine. Again, I think that was revealed with the people to try to do the pro-Palestinian thing, you know, kind of thing, and that just kind of, you know, blew apart fairly quick, and a lot of people warned them about that too. Like, you look, you're not going to be able to cooperate with you know, some of these Muslims in, like, be that in European countries or pro-Palestinian activists who are not of European descent in, for example, America or even Canada, things like that. And eventually they'll just start eating each other. I personally think it is impossible, but if someone achieves doing that, to achieve a bigger objective, to change the political landscape in order for us to advance, fine. You know, like, I don't.
Well, and it's just all about context, right? It's all about where the time and the place. And so I'm not proposing some, you know, strategy that everybody around the world needs to get behind. I'm just saying,
sure.
Hey, yeah. Here's some ideas that if people started implementing these things in their local community, you might be able to save your community for a period of time. And, you know, for me, I think we're all born into this earth and our bodies to just live out our best life and create something better. And so these are the circumstances we're born into. What do you want to do? Do you want to sit here and crawl up in the fetal position on the floor and cry about it? Or do you want to just say, hey, I got a life to live. I want to make the world a better place. Let's put one foot in front of the other and start. It's that simple.
And making the world a better place is to preserve our race and be with our own. Okay, so we only have a few minutes. You have a hard stop here shortly. I do want to let you go. One chat from Ghost Dog here says, so much love. Curtis Stone, long-term fan and supporter. Is it Chuffed? Is that how I pronounce it? Chuffed to see here on Red Ice. Thank you, Ghost Dog Man. Yeah, we're very happy to have Curtis here. Also, shout out to Base Maiden, by the way, for helping us, Base Maiden on X.
Oh, yeah,
for helping to connect us and stuff. So shout out to her, obviously, very, very nice. All right, Curtis, we're going to have you back because I do want to talk about the farming aspects, the food aspect,
let's,
you know, some
it,
of
Henrik.
That.
So let's do that. Time, but, yeah. We obviously have so much we can talk about that we
for
could
sure.
just riff for hours. So
for
let's
sure.
Let's do it.
Where can people find you before we let you go?
Yeah, my YouTube channel there, Off Grid with Curtis Stone. On X, I'm at Off Grid Stone. I just got back on Instagram, at Off Grid Curtis Stone. And then my main website is freedomfarmers.com. I've got a platform there where we produce homestead real estate listings that are A+ properties. So if people want to get on the land, they want to get into rural areas, I've got a platform where we produce about 20 to 30 listings a week that are really good homestead properties. And they're often very affordable, very reasonable. We scour the internet and we have a process in which we review these. And I used to do this in private consulting for years, but we've got a way to do it. We have a whole team that does it. So if people want to get on the land, this is mostly, I would say, for North Americans, though we have reviewed European properties, but not a ton. Mostly American and Canadian. If you want to get on the land, just head over to freedomfarmers.com. Like, we can help you get on the land a lot quicker than having to go through a grueling process of driving all over the country to look at places. We can help you get there like 99% faster.
Interesting. And is that the accelerator? That's what that is, the program here?
Yeah, Homestead Accelerator. Okay, that's it, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, well, we can talk a little bit more about that in detail next time you join us. But I do want to let you go, Curtis. Thank you so much for being here with us. I appreciate your time. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Absolutely, brother.
All right.
Great talking
to you. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Take care. You too. All right. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Yeah, a little shorter today, but that's totally fine. We'll get Curtis back on at some point here, and we'll talk more about these things. Very, very interesting. I do want to say thank you to Albert as well, who sent a huge dono super chat. Thank you, Albert, so much. Good to see you as always. He says, hi, Henrik. I'm still at work. Hope everything's well over there. Going to watch this later. Take care. You as well. Thank you so much, Albert. I appreciate you. Thank you to Ghost Dog as well. All right. So we'll be back tomorrow then, obviously, with Flashback Friday. Join us for that. If you do want to check out our member section, please do that. RedIceMembers.com, Subscribestar.com/RedIce, or RedIceTV.locals.com. It's only $10 a month. Helps us tremendously. Please consider signing up so we can keep doing this and be a voice for our people. We appreciate you guys. Very, very good of our members to support us so we can do this. Also, we do have a producer or executive producer tier if you would like to get a shout out at the end of the shows. Thank you to T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, we have Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, Nwaneng Jeebs, President Obunga Mongoose, William Fox. We got Angry White Sockimom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf. We also have The Ride Never Ends, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, Rex Ballington, Call Me Combo Deal, The Dearborn Toxic Event, Brandon Anthony, Penelope 7 USA, Bertrand Compere. We got Dixie Drone Force. Shout out to Albert Arctic Wolf, Europe Awake, and also Teutonic Werebear. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate you. Also, thanks to our producers, Mr. Walker 696, Lord H.B. Lovecraft, Yuan Son Trevor, Leroy Demand, Der Suave, Snark Pops, Not Up For Violin, Eyes Open, Whitewater Rafting Fan, Mr. Lemry, Jetfire, Urinew, ExposedFlyers.com, Obadiah Hexwell, Shane B. We have Perfect Brute, Restitutor Orbis, Single Action Army, Alcyone, and also The Boo Man. All right, again, if you want one of those, you can get it over at RedHouseMembers.com or Subscribestar. Odyssey is currently demonetized, so that option is out, unfortunately, but that's how it goes. We'll see if they get their stuff back or not. But anyway, thank you, guys. We appreciate you. We'll be back here tomorrow then with Flashback Friday. Everyone in chat, thank you for joining us. Thank you to everyone who sent a super chat and donated to the show. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, take care. And also, of course, folk first. See you later.
New Red Ice merch available now. Folk first t-shirts for adults and for toddlers. Fatigues for men. Our favorite, the Red Ice camper mug or ceramic with black print. High quality leather keychain with solar boat imprint. Our Red Ice hat, one of our best sellers. Pick one up today, or why not? Gray Auslander Rouse t-shirts for both women and men. We also have fridge magnets, Folk First, One Disease, and our black men's t-shirt with the classic red solar boat. Folk First. Get your Red Ice merch from LanasLlama.com. Get an item today. Lana's Llama, proud sponsor of Red Ice.
Thank you for watching. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for exclusive members content. Don't miss our latest shows, interviews, and other videos only for subscribers. You can also become a member by signing up at subscribestar.com/redice. Get full access and help support our work. See you on the other side.